Good morning. Welcome to Preventing Grace podcast for this week. We thought we would throw all caution to the wind and talk about marriage, since we've been married for 15 years now, so we know.
We know everything there is to know about marriage.
We know lots and lots. And we're awesome at it. So we thought we would bless the world with our incredible knowledge. And I actually don't think that we agreed on what aspects of marriage we would talk about. But what are your thoughts and feelings about?
About marriage?
Marriage. That's not what we
is that. Is that the question? What are your thoughts and feelings about marriage?
No, I don't really want to know. I'm assuming all of them are great. No, we thought we'd talk about problems in marriages, because we do a fair bit of marriage counseling. And premarital instruction and marriage counseling. And we have to do it from the Bible straight out, because we can't always go on our experience. We haven't experienced everything there is to experience in marriage. So we just have to...
The first session is going through the first instructive session is always going through what the Bible says about marriage and those sorts of things, and we tend to find that issues pop up as we do that. So if you were like in all of our many years of marriage counseling, what would you say are some red flags that pop up most often when we're talking to people
about marriage?
Yeah,
I think some of the biggest ones are, you can see, are communication issues, that you, people don't know how to talk to each other in a way that actually helps them come closer to each other. And I think that role distinction is kind of a big one, can be difficult.
Role distinction as in?
Like, what is each person supposed to do in the marriage? And how should they be together? And...
So one common complaint from women is, he never talks to me. I don't feel like I know who he is. He comes home and holds up.
He's supposed to be the head of the household, but he doesn't do anything.
Right. And then often when we delve into those cases and we or delve into the inner workings of that relationship, we'll find a woman, not always, but so often, a woman who wants to treat her husband like she might treat her girlfriends.
Her child
or her girlfriends. But, like, you know, women talk to each other like unequal.
In a different way.
There's
women
no
talk
respect
in a different way
given
than
to the
men
man.
And women talk
right. So
men and women shouldn't talk in the same way exactly that women talk to each other or men talk to each other.
But I think they also might treat, sometimes women, when they get married, they do tend to fall into this way of looking at their husband as their child. To be raised and shaped and taken care of.
If you have kids, you kind of get into a single mode of just treating everybody the same.
Right.
Or you're just kind of going along in one track.
Right.
And you don't distinguish between kinds of people.
So your 13-year-old boy won't clean his room, and your 45-year-old husband won't fix the cabinet. And so both of those kind of fall into the same verbal category. And you get fed up with both of them, and why aren't they doing?
You talk in the same way, and it.
And what is that? What women don't understand is how important it is with men to be respected verbally.
I love that we did just jump in on the women right off the bat.
Yeah, I think we should. Yeah, well, you can attack men later. Well, there are some things to say to men too, but you often in communication problems, one of the things is that the role distinction isn't being recognized by one party or the other. And so when a woman doesn't recognize the command to respect her husband in the way that she talks to him and the way that she asks for him to do things and the ways that she greets him and all those kinds of things when he comes in, then the natural response is gonna be retreat. And to his man cave or to his hole and not talk. I guess instead of retreat, he could go at the person and become angry and
aggressive.
When I say respect, women think, what does that mean? I don't mean welcome home, my lord and master. what can I do for you at this point in time? What I mean is, when men talk to each other, you accord one another a kind of respect that you've learned to do as you've grown up, so as not to be beat up. So there's this kind of mutual, not stepping on toes, mutual sizing one another up and respecting the space that you have that women don't necessarily have.
Well, women, when they are talking, are trying to have proximity to each other, mm-hmm. and come closer and to even things out.
Mm-hmm.
So the social hierarchy, even if it exists, has to be sort of sublimated. It can't,
right.
It can't be obvious if there is a social hierarchy. So language is meant to even things up and,
right.
and bring people close. Right. And so you do talk to, a woman. I would talk to my other women in a very different way than I have, than you and I would talk to each other.
Right. So if I were to go to a male friend of mine who had agreed to do a task for me, just agreed to do it, make a call or something along those lines, and I were to say to him, why are you so lazy? Why haven't you done this lately? I mean, what's your problem? Why can't you get in the ball and do this? You know, I've grown up in a context in which that would most likely be followed by a punch in the nose. So I don't say that to my male friends who are my equal, who I consider my equals. And I should consider all my equals. But I'm just saying, unless I think of the person as a person worthy of no respect, I would say something like, I would say, hi, have you had a chance to make that call yet? No.
See,
oh, okay.
Huh?
Well, look, it does need to be done by this time, but look, if you need some help on that, I mean there'd be a kind of moving around without wanting to shame and humiliate the person I'm talking to.
Well, see, this bit just undermines what I just said, because I don't think that women undermine each other verbal, like the shame. So maybe I've misplaced it. I don't think, for the most part, women would not speak to their friends to say, "What's wrong with you? Why can't
okay,
you?"
Okay, no,
be
but
more
they would
like,
speak to their who would they speak to like that, because they do get this.
Maybe just their husbands,
or their children. Maybe
their children. Yeah,
right,
you
right,
can
right.
hear it for a child often. Or somebody that they don't value. But it is interesting that sort of, what's wrong with you, why can't you do anything right tone, is acceptable culturally for women to use towards men.
And never the other way around.
Oh, no. I mean, men should not speak to a woman that way.
I think it's probably, decades of sitcoms, decades in which the man is the idiot boob who doesn't.
Yeah, and so you have to verbally berate him because he's.
And so with a man, if a man talked to me like that, who wasn't my boss or
yeah.
wasn't my, who wasn't my, directly my drill sergeant.
Yeah.
My response would be, don't talk to me like that.
Yeah.
And back off. But if a woman says that to me,
then you can't do anything.
There's less.
Either retreat or just sort of
either
get
retreat
angry.
Or get angry and frustrated.
Frustrated, right. But then retreat because you can't, you're not going to fight it out. In
I'm not
going to
punch
sense,
punch
hopefully,
in the
when you shouldn't
right.
do that. And so this happened to us very early on because
mm-hmm.
I wasn't trying to be bad. I don't even remember the argument, but I said something that subtly undermined your basic humanity. I can't remember what it was at all. Maybe you can, but you should try not to, because that would be sinful of you. And you popped through the roof. You got, your face turned red, and you were so angry, you left, you couldn't deal. And
left
I had
the room.
No,
I didn't
yeah, no, I mean, you just took, you went outside for a bit, and I had no idea what had happened. I was completely amazed. And you came back eventually and said that I had disrespected you. And I thought, that's ridiculous. I would never do that. I'm not disrespectful. Mm-hmm. And I didn't say, I probably said something. It was true. What's wrong with you? You should just accept the truth. I can't. So, slowly, though, there is a way that you can talk to each other as equals,
mm-hmm.
that supports and lifts up the essential humanity of the other person,
right,
without cutting them to shreds,
right,
and that is very hard to do in marriage because you're very close to each other.
Mm-hmm.
So very often we'll find one or the other person just sort of subtly
does it.
Undermining See, it's, the humanity it, it, what's, of the it's other very difficult in marriage, language.
And I read this from, I don't remember which book I read this in, but it's, you know, it's not just the question of two people coming from different families and different backgrounds. It's also a problem that when men and women tend to have their own kind of customs of speech and communication within their own sex.
Mm-hmm.
So getting married is a cross-cultural...
It's a cross-cultural...
On so many different levels. I mean, yeah. Even if you're from the same town, you're yeah. still blending together two very different language groups and two very different way of looking at the world. And you have to learn how to look at the world through the other person's eyes.
You have to learn how to talk to them in a way that they can hear you.
Right.
And hear the substance of what you're saying rather than... You know, all the extra emotional garbage that you bring to every right. single statement.
Now, as we're talking about this, I mean, I can imagine people who are engaged and are having the wonderful...
They should despair. I'm just kidding.
But you remember during our engagement, everything was fluffy white clouds. And
that's not true.
Yes, it was.
We argued desperately for a year and a half because we couldn't agree on the meanings of words.
I don't remember that. But anyway, but I know that sometimes engaged couples look at us askance and say... When we're talking like this and say, oh, well, we get along fine. We have great communication. We won't ever have that problem.
Yeah.
And what they don't understand is that when they actually move in and begin to have life in a...
Do life together.
I hate that phrase. But when they actually have day-to-day living together, the smell comes off the rose. How do you say that? What's the phrase?
The bloom.
The bloom, whatever it is. Bloom comes off the rose and then...
Smell. That's horrible.
That comes off the rose too, though. The smell does come off the rose. And then you have to really get down to the basics of communication
in of language use.
Yeah. So what are some ways that men mess up with the communication too?
Well, the chief way that a man fails his wife is by not listening to her.
Like, what?
So I love it. I love, love, love it when I are standing face to face and I say something out loud and then I can feel it enter into the ether world and disappear like a vapor, and you just look at me and then I say it again and you blink and then you might sometimes just wander away without speaking.
Because I'm thinking about something else.
Yeah. I love that.
Yeah.
So you have a hard time listening to me.
No, it's not that. It's
Well, no,
you always talk to me at times when I'm thinking about something else.
But that's...
And I have to switch gears.
95% of the time. So if you do have... You have had to learn how to listen to what I'm actually saying.
Right.
Just like I've learned how to talk nicely.
I have, yeah, not, like, it really is hard, you know, because I think that I read somewhere, and again, I can't remember, I wish I could remember names of books I read, but that men, anyway, have a hard time thinking about more than one thing at once. So,
yeah.
So we're not multitaskers, we're single-minded.
Although, so, I do think it's a myth that women are multitaskers, so.
Maybe it is, but you do seem to be able to hold in your head... three different conversations or three different things going
That's
on.
That's true. I can respond to four or five people.
Like
at the
kids
same
are talking,
time.
I'm talking, you're talking. You know, at the table when we're eating dinner, you're fine with that. But if I'm talking and there's another conversation going on over there, or I'm listening to somebody and there's another conversation going on, I can't deal.
Yeah. Whereas I can follow all three of them at the same
right.
and contribute.
So all I have to say, my mind, maybe it's just me, but I think most men are geared to be hyper-focused on something rather than multi-focused on various different things. So if I'm thinking really hard about, say, just before we started this podcast, I was trying to figure out whether I had the translation for this Greek word right, and I had to look it up. I had to look it up, and I couldn't think about the podcast until I could do that.
That's really.
And so if you were to start talking to me about something else, I would have to wrench my mind away from that, and I didn't want to because I knew if I wrenched my mind away from that, I wouldn't get the answer. So for me, the reason I'm focused in on, sometimes you see me in my head and you try to talk to me, I really don't hear it.
No, I know. I can tell that you don't hear it. That's what I'm saying.
Right.
From the expression on your face, I can tell that I just spoke and you literally heard no sound. And that's what I'm saying. I love that. I love that.
That just winters for our marital life, doesn't it?
And okay, but we have tried to solve that problem. I think we've solved it pretty well. How we solved that problem.
Are you screaming at me?
No. That wasn't what I was thinking of.
No, I
We talk to each other every day.
Right.
In an intentional way. Just like...
We do.
You know, because that's a great word. We have authentic, intentional communication once a day.
Well, no, we do. Okay, so we have scheduled conversations.
Yeah.
Friday nights, we have our time together. We have to have
once
that.
A week, we have a longer.
Right.
Several hours
and
together.
And I don't look at my phone unless something big is going on.
That's not true. You look at your phone.
Not
as much.
Right.
Not every
right.
minute. It's more like every 7 minutes.
That's not true.
It's really good.
I've been very good lately. I don't know if you noticed that. But anyway, so the whole point is that I have to look you in the eye. Not that I have to. I want to look you in the eye. And
I'm allowed to talk on Friday nights.
Yeah. And I
without
just have
interruption.
To, you're basically leading the conversation.
I don't have to draw breath. I can just speak mm-hmm. for hours without any... And you nod and smile. And then sometimes you're allowed to speak.
Right.
If it's been an easy week for me, then I might ask you how your week was. But that's not the norm, really. Friday is made for me to just talk.
Everything we've been...
Yeah, I managed to save up all week. But then every day we also...
Have coffee or tea
together.
Yeah.
For 10 minutes at the very least.
Usually it's after dinner, after lunch, we sit there for a minute.
And I like to try to find out what your day was like. And so sometimes you just list off all the things that you've done all day, all week, just so that I can have some idea of what your life has been like. Because you get focused.
Yeah.
So that's really good. So that we've solved all of our communication issues.
Well, so we want to advise men to do
is... listen to your wife. You... Mean,
wretches,
bad person.
But in ways to, I mean, but actually schedule it. It has to be a formal. It has to be almost a liturgical
thing.
Yes. I mean, so you can't just saying listen to your wife. It's not very helpful. But saying okay, look, you need to schedule time in your day and time in your week where where you have decided in your mind. Okay, now I'm going to take away my focus from those other things that I'm focusing on, or that other thing I'm focusing on, and focus on my wife for this period of time. And that's been my focus. It's got to be scheduled.
Yeah. So much of marriage we would counsel as liturgical.
Mm-hmm.
You make a decision of the will,
mm-hmm.
and then you enact it with your mind and body.
I talked to a guy just the other day who was he was talking about some problems in his marriage, and he was saying that, his wife is just having a real hard time. They just had a baby. She's having a difficult time around the house. He's helping her around the house, but
probably not enough, though.
Well, anyway,
I bet I can just know. I'm just kidding.
But they don't ever talk. He says,
yeah,
he hasn't talked to her in a long time,
and she's really mad at him all the time.
And that has also meant that they have less intimacy than
and by intimacy,
I'm using a euphemism, right? So it's.
Marital unpleasantness.
Yeah, right. But in our counseling situation, we've talked about that. We've said you've got to have, that's another thing you got to schedule. You got to schedule, if you schedule your conversations, you've got to schedule sex as well, actually. It's got to be something that you're both committed to doing. Otherwise, life does just push both your talking and your being together as husband and wife, as one flesh, in out of the picture. And you have to have that.
Those are kind of the two pillars that keep you strengthened against the onslaught of the world. If you don't talk and you are not together in that
sexually
horrible way, I'm just kidding, then you cannot really withstand the you maybe can for a while, but your marriage is going to be open to disaster. You're not doing.
And again, I can just hear our engaged friends listening to this. Ha! We would never have to schedule these things. We love to talk and
love to be with each other.
We just can't wait to be with each other when we're married. And more, we'll say yes.
Yeah.
It'll be great.
That'll be great.
And
you.
I bet the first year that you things will probably often do just putter along normally and wonderfully. But then comes the child, and the job, and the bills, and school or work or whatever it might be.
And so you schedule everything else that's important to you. You schedule, you have a particular time that you go to church, and you go to your job every day, and you eat meals, and you do things in a regular kind of order. Those two main things should not be left entirely up to spontaneity. I mean, you're not going to, they're two of the most important things in your life.
Right.
You shouldn't just sort of consign them to a haphazard, well, if I, you know, of course we'll be passionately in love and we'll really want to talk to each other for 7 hours. You wouldn't
you
do
won't.
That with anything else that's really important. So those two things, which are really more primary even than other things, should become part of the regular rhythm of your common life together.
Don't imagine, if you're engaged, don't imagine that the passion that you have right now is going to be a constant. You're going to always be in love. Well, I've always been in love with you. That's not changed. But because life does just kind of bear down on you, the passionate clinging to one another in conversation and then physically when you're married, that doesn't last unless you make it last, unless you work to make it last.
You have to work on it.
In a willed way. And I know it sounds totally unromantic, and I do think this is related to why some evangelicals come into a liturgical church and say, well, this is so rote, and how can you just say words that are printed on a page and have any
week after
worship?
Week after
how is that worship? Because it's and that, we talked about this last week, one of the big problems with evangelical worship is worship has been equated with spontaneous emotion.
Yeah.
I if I'm not feeling it, I'm not doing it. If I'm not feeling love for Jesus, then something's wrong and I'm not worshiping.
Right.
Whereas in the liturgical church says it's not about your feelings, it's about your will and about your decision to praise God and to take this time and devote your mind and will toward Him. And that's exactly what it looks like to make a marriage work long term, is you're devoting your will, or you're turning your will and your mind and your words toward the other person. So is that...
Yeah. Well, the other thing, I mean, people like to talk about the domestic church, how the family is a little bit like the church. But if you really consider those two, the talking to each other, which is really the foundational requirement for the woman to survive in marriage, is for the husband to listen to her talking. And sex, really, which is...
For the man. Yeah.
For the man. Women
need it, but like it
and all that kind of thing. But it's kind of the thing that keeps the man breathing and living in a marriage. Those really sort of nicely reflect the liturgical life of the church, where you have the word and the sacrament. And I like the sort of reversal because because it kind of flips over, where the church, who's the bride, is sustained and nourished through the bread and wine. Then Jesus, the word, preaches and talks to the church, and the church listens to him. I like that it sort of flips, but it's there.
Yeah, if you're just worried about all the licking and panting, that was our dog. Our dog came in.
And now we have all the dogs.
Right, right. Okay.
Which, there they are, all of them together.
Right.
All two of them. Yeah. I think maybe I should put them out.
Yeah.
So, I think it might be nice to say why people should get married.
Why, for the furtherance of the human race?
Well, there's that, but, you know, marriage is so under assault. Why should people bother with something so difficult? And,
oh, why not just shack up for a while or date?
Or not, you know.
Or just close in on yourself and not be with anybody?
Why not just...
Well, I mean, that's the problem. A lot of men and women are able to do that now, because men especially, because of pornography. And why do I need a real live woman?
Why do you need a real person to be with?
She's complicated and complains and nags and isn't always there for
I
me.
Don't
so
nag. No, I just no, want I'm the saying record
what
to the, show.
What another person might say. I would never say that.
Right.
So yeah, what's the benefit of actually engaging in the work of marriage when you could just engage in the non work of being
yourself.
By yourself of yourself? Well,
that was a good answer. Well, because it's worth the trouble, really.
Well, I think the Christian answer is that of course, believers are not. If you have sexual passion of that nature, as a man,
you must
seek
focus
a wife.
It toward an actual
right.
person.
And on a deeper level, of course, is the truth that in marriage, Christ is revealed as the husband of his bride, the church, and the gospel is preached. So if you are not called to celibacy, and you know that because you can't be celibate,
you should get married.
You should get married.
And in so doing, you can preach the gospel.
Yeah, yeah.
By your very manner of life.
And raise up children for Jesus, which is a great thing. The more children we have. You need to have babies and have lots
Who
of babies.
Who are you talking to? You're
shaking I'm pretending that engaged couples are listening
shaking
to
your
us.
Finger
right?
at
they
me.
Need to have
I
babies.
Feel like I've
no, you've done
really
your,
played my part
you've
in
done
that
our role,
realm.
But and it doesn't seem like God's going to give us any more, but...
We shouldn't
speak too soon.
Tempt him.
But but if you... You know, the raising of children in a Christian home is going to become more and more important over the next... You know, a few decades, because as the public schools and the culture begins to deteriorate and devolve as it already is, the only bastion the only two bastions that are going to remain for raising children in the fear and knowledge of God is the family and the church. And if you don't have kids,
you can't participate in that important work, can you?
Yeah.
You should feel bad. You should go out and get married.
And have babies.
What about the people who are already married?
Have more babies. What's the question?
I thought you were sounding judgmental and preachy there. And that's all right. It's your job. the preacher. I would say that in a world where people are increasingly isolated from each other, bothering to get married and bothering to tie yourself to another person is really worth it, even if it ends up not being what you expected, even if it's not what you think it ought to look like. It's really worth the very difficult work. And it's not always as difficult. It's always good to go into marriage with really low expectations, wouldn't you say?
Yes. Right. Low expectations of the
of
other person
how awesome
and
it's
going to
be.
And,
yeah. Because if you go in thinking, oh my word, this is going to be the hardest thing ever, and I'm probably not going to enjoy myself, you can only go up from there. And you'll end up having a fairly good time, probably,
right.
if you go in really understanding what a horrible sinner you yourself are,
right.
and having a true knowledge that the other person is also a sinner. You'll find that it's actually a fun enterprise. But if you go in thinking that you yourself are wonderful,
and that your spouse
and the other person is also perfect,
wonderful, yeah, then you're going to have
then you're
going to
be
horrible time.
Really miserable. Because the person isn't going to ever meet your expectations.
Right.
of how life should be.
And if you're going into the marriage with the expectation that the person is going to meet your expectations, then you're going in for the wrong reasons anyway.
Yeah.
We don't have time to talk about it today, but another problem we often see is, in both in men and women, is people going into the marriage because they want this person to fulfill all their dreams and desires and needs. And
yeah.
So because they it's a really kind of a selfish way of loving the self by finding a person to make it easier
to love the self better.
To love the self better.
That you right? help me love me.
You help me love me. So that's what people are saying when they say, "Oh, I love you because you the way you make me feel when I'm around you." That's really I love me, and you help me do that. And
that goes on. I mean, that's really insidious, and it's in every corner. You always keep smacking into your own primary self-love, and marriage, when it's working well, will constantly drag you out of it.
Right.
Because you'll develop compassion and empathy for the other person over time, and you'll be kind of relieved of your own self-existential burden in a practical way. Just with your not having to just work at it, you know, by the sheer force of your will.
Right.
You can have moments relieved of thinking about yourself because you can think about the other person.
Exactly.
So it's really good. It's a good, healthy thing to do. It's good for your own psyche.
You mortify your flesh.
Yeah, that sounds so fun.
So awesome. Yeah.
This has really been a great subject for us to pursue. And
we should probably bring it to close because I think we're out of time here. We're close to being out of time.
And
we are, in fact, out of time. Yeah.
That's really amazing. Well, we might potentially pick this up next week, or I don't know what we'll talk about next week. I also might be nice to talk about children.
Yeah.
And what a terrible trial that could be. Just kidding. Thank you for listening, and we'll be back next week.